Noel.
Thank you, Your Honors. My name is Matt Noel. I'm here on behalf of the appellant in this case, Kristen Smith. May it please the court. Your Honors, this case is about what rights my client has to a fair trial, basically under the Constitution of the United States. I said it in oral argument, and I'm going to let Your Honors know that the substance of this case, I don't think Hollywood would make into a movie. My client, it is alleged by the government, faked a pregnancy for 9 months, and then just happened to be in the area of her sister, who had a baby at the same time my client was going to have one, and she abducted the baby and took her, was in the process of taking her from Beloit, Wisconsin to Colorado to live with her. I don't believe that the government proved all the elements of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. The jury instruction in this case specifically told the jury that my client had to be acting without the consent of the parents of the child in this case. My client testified that the father in this case gave her permission to take the baby. Late at night, he woke up. One thing I need to tell Your Honors is the mother and the father of the baby in this case were planning on moving to Colorado with my client just 2 short days later. The original plan was my client was going to go to Colorado, come back, and then everybody was going to move out there. There was a couple of intervening events, and my client, the mother and the father of the child, had to go to Chicago, come back to the Beloit, and then travel to Colorado, all in the short period of time of 2 days. The father...
Are you complaining about an instruction?
No, I'm not. I'm sorry. I'll cut to the chase, Your Honor. I'm not complaining about the instruction. The instruction said that my client had to be working without the consent of the parents in this case. And there was no direct evidence that the father didn't give her permission to take the baby. The government had a chance
to... Her story is completely implausible.
I'm sorry?
Her story is completely implausible, and the jury was entitled to reject it.
I understand that.
There was abundant evidence that she faked a pregnancy and wanted to steal this baby.
I understand that.
You're leading with your weakest argument.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The other part that
Even
I don't
if
think...
if she had taken the baby with permission, her concealing it in that, you know, behind the gas station in this terrible weather, that's kind of unbelievable.
I agree with that, Your Honor.
Except
I think
it happened. And then lying to the police and so on.
And I think what happened at that point, or what my client testified to, was that she panicked at that point. She knew she was on bond for a warrant out of Texas. She had been in trouble with the law before. She had panicked at that point. The other part, and the more interesting part that I don't think that the government proved, was how this would have benefited her in any way. The parents were set to move out there in 2 days. I think it's implausible to think that my client could have gotten to Colorado, called back and said, now you can't move out here, and she wouldn't have become the prime suspect in this case. And I agree that not all people have well thought out plans, but she would have been the prime suspect here. And I think the waters got muddied even more by the government on closing argument, arguing that the actual abandonment of the child at the gas station benefited her in some way. I don't think that that's covered by the statute. The statute doesn't say if she hides the child or anything like that. It says if
maybe
she's
so, conceived. But the primary theory of the case is that she wanted a baby, she faked a pregnancy, and laid this plot to steal the baby, and did so.
I understand that.
So, you know, whether the concealment of the baby benefited her is kind of a backup theory that we don't need to concern ourselves much with, because the primary theory is so powerful.
I understand,
and
Your Honor.
And so powerfully supported by the evidence in the case.
And that brings me to some other points I wanted to make during the trial of the case, or during the trial in this case, and I do not mean to infer by my next argument that she has a right to lie because of statements that got suppressed, but I believe that some of the suppressed statements that were used as impeachment evidence in this case were improperly introduced. It was entered by the government that there was a prosthetic belly found in her vehicle that night. I didn't touch on that in direct examination. My client did state that she was pregnant. However, she said that she had lost her baby sometime in January. I don't believe that those two things are inconsistent. She could have both been pregnant and lost the baby on the 16th of January and still had a prosthetic belly. And even more concerning was the drawing of the map. The map was never introduced as an exhibit. It was just shown to my client on the stand to refresh her recollection. And it was a very minor point. My client had said that she had put the baby, I believe, situated in front of the gas station. And one of the government's witnesses said that the baby was actually found in the back of the gas station. That map being shown to the jury, not actually published to the jury, but just the fact that they knew that there was a map, I think that this is a highly sensitive case, as I think your honors understand. We're talking about a child who was left out in the cold for 30 hours, and not just cold, extreme cold. I think the actual reading that night was -8 degrees.
So what's wrong with the admissibility of the map?
I don't think it's inconsistent with anything she said at trial.
Well, she said that she left the baby in front.
And the map
shows she left the baby behind. Why is that not diametrically opposed?
Because she was left at the gas station. I guess the difference there is so slight and the prejudicial effect is so high. These statements were suppressed by the court. And also, that goes to my last point about the coercive, whether or not she was coerced. When she sat down to take a polygraph test with Special Agent Ryson from the Iowa Department of Criminal Investigations, he was explaining the Miranda waiver form to her, and he said that...
I don't think Miranda applies in this case. I don't think you can have a Miranda right in a kidnapping case before the victim is found, right? So suppose she says, well, I know where the baby is, of course, but I'm not going to tell you because I want a lawyer, right? That'd be ridiculous, I think. You really think a person has a right to just clam up when there's this baby, you know, and it's a miracle the baby lived?
I agree with that.
I don't think Miranda should apply in such cases.
I guess I'm confused on your premise. They read her the Miranda form and told her that no one was forcing her to talk to them.
I don't think they had to read her Miranda rights. If all they're asking about is, where is the baby? I don't think what they say to her is, look, we really have to find this baby, so we'd like you to answer our questions about where the baby is. But, of course, if you don't want to, you know, that's your Miranda right, and you got a lawyer. I don't see that as a sane conversation.
Once she asked for a lawyer, do you believe that her rights kicked in at that point?
No. Not when the question is, where is the kidnapped victim? I don't think you're going to sacrifice a person's life in order to provide Miranda warnings. I don't think the law is that stupid, although it may be.
And under that analysis, I guess her rights don't exist when the victim's rights trump that. And I guess I don't believe that. I think she was in
the
custody.
This is the right to live. That seems to me more important than the right not to answer questions. Now, maybe you don't agree. That's fine.
Legally, I don't
agree.
I'll
tell you what I think.
I understand that, Your Honor. And I think what the law says is her rights don't exist in a vacuum. The magistrate judge echoed the feelings, I think, of 98% of people when they said, when the magistrate judge said in its recommendation that if these officers wouldn't have gone this far, they would have had many sleepless nights. On a personal level, I can't disagree with that. But on a legal level, I don't think my client's rights exist in a vacuum. I think she had the right. She was in custody, and obviously they were interrogating her on this kidnapping. So at that point, she asked for a lawyer. She asked for a lawyer several times. She made comments about being done. I never raised the Fifth Amendment right to stay silent, and I'm not doing so now. I'm just using that as a way to articulate my point that she had no choice but to feel compelled to speak to the officers because everything she did, even the ultimate event that the district court found led to the suppression. The next day, the first thing they did was try to get her to sign a waiver of rights. When she told them, the last thing they had heard from her was, I'm not going to sign anything without a lawyer present.
I don't know where any of this gets you. The district court found as a fact that all the statements on the second day were voluntary. And under the Supreme Court's holding in Haas, that means they can be used for impeachment.
I agree.
Miranda then just completely drops out of the picture. I don't see how your argument gives you any help. All you have is the standard argument that the scope of cross-examination can't exceed the scope of the direct. It doesn't depend on Miranda. It doesn't depend on Edwards. It's just a simple argument about the scope of cross being confined to the scope of direct. And then your problem on appeal is that whether the scope of cross exceeds the scope of direct is a question we leave pretty much to district judges unless they've taken leave of their senses. And it didn't look like the judge here took leave of his senses.
I think the way the district court handled this would put a defendant in a situation where...
Is there anything that depends on Miranda as opposed to the standard rule that the scope of cross is limited to the scope of direct? That's my question.
No.
So it's all a red herring. We're just left with the scope of direct question.
Unless, what I'm arguing is that finding a fact was incorrect at the district court level. I do believe she was coerced.
Yeah, well, you can believe it all you want, but there is a judicial finding that these statements were voluntary.
And I understand.
There you are.
And I understand that this court greatly defers to that judicial finding.
You haven't even argued that finding was clearly erroneous. You've pitched everything on the limit to the scope of direct.
I understand that, Your Honor. I would have gotten to that. I do think that was clearly erroneous, and I think that's what I was trying to articulate before when I was going through how they ignored her requests for counsel and other things during this marathon session of questioning they had with her. She asked for a lawyer, I think the district court found, at least four times. They all happened late at night, and I understand that. But the first thing that the agents did the next day was present her with a waiver of rights, and I think that goes back
to
the
coercion. That is an argument about Edwards. It's not even an argument about Miranda. And it has nothing to do with the argument you're making and nothing to do with whether the statements were voluntary.
I think it has something to do with that the statements were voluntary because she was...
You may think that, but the Supreme Court does not conceive of Edwards as a voluntariness doctrine. Right? So you're now disagreeing with the justices of the Supreme Court as well. You're just digging a hole here. And the usual rule is when you find yourself in a hole, stop digging.
Thank you, Your Honor. With that, I will reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Noel. Ms. Pfluger?
May it please the Court, Julie Pfluger on behalf of the government. As the government's brief laid out, the government believes that the district court did not err in finding no coercion was used in getting the defendant, Ms. Smith's statements. Her statements, as the district court found, were voluntary with no coercion used. Secondly, the case clearly has sufficient evidence to uphold the jury's verdict and the court's denial of the defendant's motion for judgment of acquittal. Additionally, there are no evidentiary errors in this case. The judge allowed cross-examination on questions and statements that were contradictory to what the defendant stated on direct examination and allowed the government to ask a question about defendant's prior arrest in Texas. The defendant claims that was against the stipulation. However, the judge ruled in favor of the government. Therefore, the government feels there were no errors and no abuse of discretion, and I'd be happy to take questions from the court on any of those issues. Or I will just rest on my brief.
Okay, thank you very much. Do you have anything further, Mr. Noel?
I do not, Your Honor.
Okay, well, and you were appointed. Thank you for your efforts on behalf of the family. Thank Ms.